Hi, folks, and welcome to a brand new episode of IT Life Radio, the show for you, the IT pro, the technologist, the futurist, and the maker. Every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, we cover topics most important to your life, your IT life. I'm your host, David Wagner, executive editor for Community and IT Life at Information Week. Today, we're talking gamification. I know, I heard a few groans out there. Gamification is one of those topics where some people have had a really bad experience. I can sympathize. I've certainly seen it happen. But today we've got an expert in gamification who is going to help you see it in a new light. Today we have Steve Sims. Steve is CDO of Badgeville's Behavior Lab. He has 20 years of experience in game development and production for web, mobile, console, and PC systems. He started his career at Electronic Arts and EA Online, where he was an executive producer and responsible for Madden NFL Football, the number one selling sports video game franchise in North America. And EA's earliest forays into the online space, including fantasy sports and casual games. He has worked in the gaming industry since, with notable roles including director of operations at Gemini Mobile Technologies and Vice President of Product Management and Service Operations at OutSpark. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, how are you? Nice to be here.
Good. Thanks. We're glad to have you here, too. Well, Steve, I promise not to ask too many Madden fanboy questions during the show, but let me just say I've probably spent more of my life playing Madden than I have sleeping or eating. So I think it's fair to say you know how to engage me. So tell me, why are so many people getting gamification wrong?
I think the reason they're getting gamification wrong is really the approach they take in understanding the end user. It's really about gamification is really about trying to figure out what the needs of your business are, but at the same time, or your program, but at the same time, putting in a light that acts as a win-win for your end users. The reality of anything is that you can't get people to do what they don't want to do. So by putting something in the right framework, you hopefully can move the needle in a direction that where everybody benefits.
Oh, well, that's interesting, because you said you can't get people to do what you don't want them to do. But isn't that kind of what enterprises are trying to get gamification to do? You know, we're trying to inspire workers into behavior that they don't engage in voluntarily?
Well, it depends. So you really, there's a bunch of directions to go here. In any kind of enterprise, right, there's two types of work if you think about it, right? There's work that's voluntary, and then there's work that's seen as part of your job and kind of almost mandatory for it. And those two types of systems generally have different emotional pulls on you. And so, like I said, understanding why somebody wants to do something and what their base motivations are is kind of the first step, and then understanding the context and how they're interacting. So let me give you an example. If you have a very competitive thing, let's say like sales guys tend to be fairly competitive, then setting up a competitive system with things like leaderboards and contests and stuff, which is pretty standard, and this is why some people get this wrong, that's not a bad thing for sales guys, because there are a lot of psychological models that say what motivate people, but to make it simplistic for the thing, we kind of bucket people into four groups. People are motivated to feel smart, which is a lot of the audience of, let's say, an IT or a tech crowd. People like to feel smart from the code they've written, the things they've the operations work they've done, the things they've installed or managed. They like to feel successful, and success could be winning, like in Madden, like me beating you or you beating me. But it could also be successes, climbing, Mount Kilimanjaro or something, or doing some kind of big achievement that you're proud of. There's a social value component, which is what is my status in relative to everybody else, and as well as if there's a aspect of tribal affiliation, am I part of the company, am I part of the team? And then there's something called structure, which is feeling structured is kind of like what you see with call center people and stuff, where it's If you can know that you're doing your job and that you're making progress towards the end goal and that people recognize and validate for you, it relieves kind of a sense of fear and things. So going back to those four things, feeling smart, feeling successful, feeling socially valued, and feeling structured. In the sales case I mentioned, most sales guys, I'm overly generalizing here, but most sales guys are motivated by feeling successful and socially valued. They don't really care if they're perceived by the group as being smart. They just want to win and, you know how well I did on, my W-2 last year. And so as a result, they're fairly competitive by nature, and a competitive kind of system design will work for them. On the other hand, if you're not dealing with people who are innately competitive or not motivated by that, throwing a competitive kind of structure out there, while it will get some initial success, over the medium and long term, it will crash pretty hard. And so that's when you talk about what you're doing wrong. It's not understanding the motivations of the people and applying the wrong mechanics and the wrong design elements and the wrong kind of things to that use case, and that's what causes the dissonance and the problems for them.
Interesting. So what's interesting about that to me is that you can think of gamification as something that works for non-competitive people. While I always think of, the game in gamification is by necessity a competition. So how do you structure a game in a non-competitive way for a non-competitive environment?
Yeah, well, let me tie your statement to one other thing, which is I'm not a big fan of the word gamification. What I think is it got its genesis from gaming because there were so many intrinsic motivations. If you think about how many hours you spent playing Madden or doing anything, right? It's because you're inherently interested in what's going on, and it's tapping into kind of core drivers and needs in your psyche, and that's kind of what we're trying to do here. It's not necessarily a design of the game. The narrative of the game is really the narrative of your career. Am I becoming a better IT guy? Is the company doing better because of my contribution, et cetera? That said, you can see, for instance, an example of non-competition would be, let's say, social collaboration would be one. So you may be in an enterprise and we're all raising money for something like, Food Harvest Bank, or we're doing a hackathon, or we're doing something. There may be a motivation that's different than a pure competitive angle that will motivate people. And so we see that a lot, actually. Another example would be, let's say you're in a technical community, right? Let's even take this, something that has nothing to do with Badgeville, something like Stack Overflow. Why do people answer questions in Stack Overflow, right? Stack Overflow is a technical thing where, people go in and they ask questions in very interesting topics, right? Are you doing AngularJS? Are you doing, .NET or PHP? Are you in Mongo, Ruby, Hadoop? Whatever your favorite flavor is, right? Some kind of networking thing. People answer those things because they like the rush and the social value they feel and how smart they feel from answering people's questions. So you could see a lot of gamified elements or approaches in things like reputation systems, where people are rewarded for contributing, for contributing content, for curating content, right? And Stack Overflow is a pretty good example of that. They do a pretty good job.
Right. So what I heard there was two sort of different tacks there. One was sort of a collective goal setting where the competition is to meet the goal as opposed to compete with your coworkers. And then the other tact was sort of competitive in the sense that it was an attempt at status. But it wasn't a direct competition so much as it is let's reward people for participating and for showing their skills. Is that a fair way of making that, of characterizing those strategies?
Yeah, those two strategies, exactly.
Yeah.
What's interesting is the thing that's interesting at Stack Overflow is the more – so what happens is with feeling competitive, there's always a winner and a loser, right? But if you're trying to quantify expertise, right, there's no limit to how many black belts you can have. And the more styles, so to speak, of technology in this case, right, there are, the more experts there can be, which means that you can make more people feel special and validated, which means that they'll contribute more. Generally,
right. Right.
Another way to do it, just to think, give you another tool in your tool belt, Teams is a way to abstract competition. So if you think about the narrative of your journey in any company, right? You know, I'm making this up, but, you know, you work at Oracle or Microsoft or IBM or, you know, something smaller, right? Whatever it is. You know, there's the narrative of how you're doing, and there's a narrative of how the company's doing and whether you're doing something that's important. And the kind of bigger than you, you know, you're part of something bigger idea, works in that charity example I think I gave before, but it also works in how the company's doing. You know, like we're changing the world for something, high-speed networking. We're changing the world for something, right? Another tool, though, before I drop it so I don't forget, is Teams. So if you have something where individual competition is not the exact right thing, but competition is okay if you could abstract it, Teams work well. And that's especially true for, I don't know how international the Information Week audience is, I assume it is, but different countries have different rules about what you can surface about an employee, right? So, you know, certain countries in the EU, you can't actually put in performance data. So Teams is a way to abstract that, still motivate them, but, you know, take a little of the edge off.
Right. Interesting. Well, before I go on, I want to ask you more questions. I do want to say that we have a live chat going on right now. Speaking of competition, anybody who's listening right now will know that we have a little bit of a gamification in our chat room, which is that the more you post, the higher rank you have in our community. I see some ninjas in our audience right now. That's somebody who's been around for a long time. That's great. So if you haven't been to our chat, now would be a great time to go in there because you can pump up your stats and play a game at the exact same time that we're talking about gamification. More importantly, joining that conversation with professionals just like you is a great way to hash out these ideas. And we're going to be joining that chat in about 20 minutes. So get your questions ready for Steve at the same time. So, Steve, up to this point, I think we've been talking mostly about the theory of how to set up a game, and I think that's an important place to start. Any game, if you don't know what the rules are and what you're trying to get at, the game's never going to go anywhere, right?
Yep.
But let's start talking about some specific places where I think we can help with gamification. Do you know of any places, particularly in the IT field, where you think gamification is a really successful way of increasing productivity, whether it's development or call centers or anything? Where are some of the places you think gamification can be used really well?
Well, it's kind of funny because in some ways it's an open-ended question. If you have human behavior involved, then you can use these psychological techniques. Places I've seen it work really well. Onboarding works really well. I've seen it in product management and forecast estimation. I've seen it in communities. Again, like I mentioned, the Stack Overflow, but I've seen it in both employee communities. So the idea of self-service and answering each other's questions, which reduces call deflection. That's a really good one. I've seen it in learning and training everywhere. So learning and training systems, such like, you know, where you're onboarding first and then you're either doing, there's different types of learning, right? There's track learning, there's compliance-based learning, and then there's kind of ad hoc learning. It works really well for those kind of things. It also works in talent management. And so when I'm thinking of talent management, I know it's a weird thing to mention for an IT audience, but if you look at somebody like HackerRank, you know, which the startup that does code contests and challenges, right, to basically figure out who's, you know, who writes the most efficient code, that's an interesting example of kind of a breakout way of somebody using something in a unique way, right? I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah,
so let's see, we talked learning, training, performance management also. That you see in a lot of service desk. Call center, or you can actually see that in sales as well. It just depends on what the goals are. If you abstract yourself to say, what are we trying to achieve? and then you kind of blend that with the other Venn diagram of what are, you know, what are the behavior, what are we trying to achieve, how are those goals and KPIs or key performance indicators represented by actual behaviors that people do, what is the context of the system they interact with, and then what is their motivation for doing it. You can kind of piece it together. That's kind of a high level of the approach.
Right. So there are a lot of things that I want to get to, a lot of them, but I'd like to start off with onboarding and sort of internal culture, self-service kind of things. I think that's where most of our listeners have probably run afoul of gamification. I have certainly gone through onboarding processes that felt like a million hoops to run through and jump through instead of helping me on board. And I think everyone in listening to this call has probably some sort of internal wiki or social media or some sort of internal system where they are ranked in some sort of a way. A lot of times those come off as more work than they're useful. Is that your experience? And if so, how do you make it so that those people don't feel like they're just it's a second job just to be a part of these kinds of things?
Well, I think there's a couple of key things. I mean, if you look at how behaviors happen and why people do things, this is more out of the psychology work based out of Stanford. There's a guy named Dr. B.J. Fogg. If you're interested in this stuff, I think he's the website is behaviormodel.org. What it says is, what his theory is that basically in order to do a behavior or get a behavior to go, there are three things that need to happen. One is a trigger needs to occur, the motivation needs to be high enough, and you have to have the ability to do whatever they're asking. So an example of that would be if I called you on the phone rings, that's the trigger. Your motivation is, hey, it's Steve and we have an interview, so I'm going to pick up the phone because I want to talk to him. And the ability is pretty easy because the phone is sitting next to you. If you change any of those things, like put the phone in the other room, I won't hear the trigger or have the ability to get it, right? Or, something significant is happening in your life and you don't want to do this, then those things block it.
Sure, I'm just playing Madden.
Yeah, exactly. And so what happens is the first thing I would look at with any of these kind of onboarding systems, regardless of the gamification or the motivation of that things, is to look at the friction that's involved in the site. So are you on the way but not in the way? Are the steps clearly broken down? Do people know exactly what they have to do, why they have to do it, and what they get for doing it? And sometimes there is something they get, they feel good, sometimes there's not. Sometimes it's just part of your job. I think also that you don't want frivolous things in there. So I think certain onboarding systems don't have any kind of feedback loop. Like if you're trying, it's interesting in some of the stuff we've done lately in our designs, we basically realize that there's corporate onboarding, which is cultural stuff, but then there's group onboarding. You know, what you care about in your specific division or group in IT is maybe different than even another group in IT. So there's multiple levels of onboarding going on. And the bigger question to me would be like, what's the quickest, best way to keep that tribal knowledge up to date, right? Because wikis go out of date. And how do you get a feedback loop? How do you make sure people are looking at the right things in the right timeline, right?
Right.
Because it costs the companies a lot of money, and it's a waste of your time if you're reading something that's out of date or awful or silly that you don't need.
Right, definitely. Well, let's talk. You mentioned training and learning. I think that's a really crucial part of IT these days. Our skill sets need to evolve faster and faster, I think, or at least that's the perception. How can I use gamification to keep my skills up, to keep my employees' skills up, my team skills up? What are the best ways to use gamification in training, education, that kind of field?
Well, I think there's a couple things. I think one of the things that we've seen a lot is this idea of employee reputation. In other words, like, you know, we talked about those reputation systems before where you're getting expertise, but I think it's really, really important for people to feel validated and to know what they're getting and doing these things, like, why am I doing this? and people want to know what skill set you have. There were, you know, there are four different types of, you know, I'm making this up, but there's different database stack, you know, either different database or different analytics stacks or different, you know, hardware configs, or, you know, you pick what, you know, where you're going to play. But for yourself and for other people, if you can show that, hey, I have these expertise and they're current, et cetera, then you'll be tapped for interesting jobs. You may get promoted faster. So that's your motivation. The motivation of the other people is to keep you educated, up to date, and be able to find the people they need within the organization. And I would recommend actually two things for that. One is to be able to track these different types of things, but, you know, ad hoc learning, get credit for that, contribution into communities where you're helping, I track that, things you've worked on, all those kind of things to build up a better rounded kind of employee profile that's visible and social to everybody in the company, or to at least your group. And those kind of things help because, you know, they help you keep your skills up, and it's a better way to drive, you know, compliance and things and staying fresh.
Right.
You know,
so it sounds to me – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and the lower level, I was going to give you an example. If you have, like, a worker at like, a we don't power these guys, but like at a Home Depot or an Orchard or something like that, what happens is their problem is they get stuck with something called power hours. I'm just going to give you an example. And a guy in lighting, you know, isn't trained in power tools or isn't trained in gardening or whatever. What happens is you end up with a bad customer experience because the person comes in and says, hey, can you help me? And the guy says, oh, I'm the lighting guy. I'm really sorry. But wouldn't it be great if he was trained in more things or she was trained in more things and be able to help you, right? So that
right.
kind of motivation, in their case, either they're getting, you know, the status of having more coverage, better hours, better picking, you know what I mean? If you find out what's valuable to them, right, and then they'll go train themselves more so that they get more exposure, and it's a self-fulfilling loop of a better customer experience. So the same thing
right.
can be applied on a higher level. I mean, if, I don't know, if you're a level two tech and you've done all the things for level three and they know it, they may tap you for some job, which gives you your break to go where you want to go, as an example.
Oh, right. So it sounds like, oh, sorry. Sorry. It's difficult sometimes on the phone to read cues when you're done. I apologize.
Oh, no worries.
So it sounds like one of the interesting side effects of gamification that is often overlooked is unearthing hidden talents. I actually was at a Information Week conference last week, and we had a CIO say, I'm not at all interested in what you do. I want to know what you can do. And it sounds like gamification within training, education, with social reputation, is a great way to unearth what it is people can do that maybe aren't a part of their job description.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We have a very large customer. I can't mention them. I'll find out if I can mention them, and then I'll tell you later, and you can do it as a follow-up. But a very large customer that wanted to – they had a very talented base of IT and engineers, and they wanted to expand into getting more data science capability. So what they did is they ran almost through like an innovation project, same kind of idea. They ran learning, training, and community around innovation to try to build up their strength. They offered courses, they offered lectures, they offered connections with these other people. And then it was completely voluntary, and these other people jumped on it. And the program was so successful, they're now going from field to field to field. But now they have, a bench. They have bench strength now of trained people who know this other field. And it's benefiting the employees because they want to learn it, right? It was just interesting, again, tech guys, like most of your audience, I would assume, are generally in some ways motivated, I know I am, by feeling smart and by accomplishing and achieving things. I mean, my silly example of that is I had an electrical engineering degree, and I was actually pleased with myself because I was able to rewire my house dimmer. that's how bad my engineering skills have become over the years. But it was funny. I mean, I saved, what, $20, you know, instead of having some guy hook it up. You know, I flipped all the breakers, I hooked it up, and then I ran upstairs before the house got on fire, and lo and behold, it worked, right? So and I was happy for 4 days over this thing. Imagine who somebody, like one of your guys in your audience, who actually does something real, you know what I mean? Coded something really cool, hooked up some massive system, figured out load balancing for, you know, a gazillion switches, figured out how to solve a data replication issue, you know, that's causing race conditions and stuff. I mean, that's amazing stuff. So, you know, when you can take that and then magnify it into other fields, you know, sky's the limit, right? And I think that's what the speaker, the CIO guy, was talking about.
Right. Well, I broke our sprinkler system trying to fix it a couple weeks ago, so I see why that would be a real good sense of accomplishment, actually. And it makes sense. That's what we're all looking for, is a little validation in our job. We've certainly covered a lot of things at Information Week about how engagement in a job often has to do more with feeling appreciated and respected than it does any sort of job responsibility or something like that. We're running low on time, but I just want to remind everybody that in about 5 minutes, Steve and I are going to head to the online chat. So if you're not already in the online chat, please join us there. Please start putting in questions for Steve. We are going to be there very soon. And now, Steve, sorry, I've got a ton of questions, but I only have a couple minutes, so I'm going to try to come up with some sort of wrap-up questions here, and then we'll get to more in the chat. But one thing that I think, you know, we've talked a lot about how you want to set up to get the motivations of your employees, how you want to the theory behind this. But what about the true technical side of this? Are there any pitfalls people run into just with setting up a system like this? It's going to have to pull in data from places, right? Do you run into any pitfalls with that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it's an estimation. You know, a lot of times what's interesting is the IT department may be purchasing it for these use cases we talked about, but it may be another division in your company, and then they're going to ask you to build it. So,
right. And
you
manage
know,
and
manage it and stuff. So that's an issue. I think it's interesting because obviously you're recording data on people and either taking that from some other API or you're actually doing some kind of tagging. There's always a some kind of PII and OAuth kind of handshake or one type or another for authentication and authorization. I think there's also these types of things and these types of persuasive technologies are all about recording behaviors, calculating what the effect is, and then presenting feedback to the user. So visualizations and how you notify or push or pull to people, the outcomes is also and is close to real time or not. Is a thing that that the guys building the system will have to know. So, I don't think any of it's hard, nothing compared to what your usual challenges are and the types of business that your readers do, but they are there. I mean, there's, you know, integrations with different technologies. Some are harder and easier than others, right? What if they don't give you the hooks to record the behavior you want to record, right? So, you know, that's all part of the design and part of the integration and why, at least, in our company, we actually have some pre-built connectors for certain things that we see a lot of use cases of so that you can connect to those workflows to make IT's job easier, as an example.
Right. So you keep mentioning recording, which is a correct way of wording it, but it's a word that sparked some feelings in me, which is that there may be some privacy issues. I mean, I know in technically whatever you do at a job is not private. I mean, by definition, it's public. It's part of your work. But are there times where you can run afoul of the way in which you're recording your employees' behavior?
It hasn't really happened to us. So the first thing is we keep this is kind of the platform defense. But in all honesty, we don't keep any PII. So what ends up happening is we end up with a hash key after a handoff, you know, after an off handshake and stuff, and then we start recording. And what we record is not everything you do; it's only individual behaviors. So it's you voted on something, you read something, you watched something, and or you contributed and made a comment, or you posted a knowledge base article, that kind of thing. It's not at the level that I think you're thinking of, which is a little more, Orwellian. And the types of things that you may add with that are metadata about it, you know, what the community space you were in and you were talking about, or some other topic or value key pair, right? It's not really, you know, in the way you're thinking. That said, again, the only time we've had any issues with that, but it's been at a larger, you know, country level, are things like, you know, you can't in certain areas of the world, like in parts of the EU, you can't show individual performance. And then who sees it, who doesn't, all that stuff. But all that's controllable, right? It's really the company's option on what they want to surface and what they don't, and what they want to record and not, and how they show it and to who. It's all in the company's hands. But we give best practices to try to keep it on the up and up.
Right. So unfortunately, I've only got time for two more questions. One I'd like a relatively quick answer on, because I think I have a feeling I know where you're going to go with this, but I want to make sure. What happens to employees that don't score well but are good employees? You're scoring for certain types of behavior. Those people are really good employees, but they don't necessarily fit the system. How do you catch those people and make sure they're not losing out?
Well, I think it's actually the other way around. It depends what, you know, we don't really score anything in that way. It's really, this thing I think is actually a benefit to the people who are outperforming in other areas. If you have two employees and one person is a slightly better engineer or slightly better of time or whatever it is than the other guy, but the other guy is spending time in the forums answering questions of customers who are irate, making them happy, don't you want to know the second guy for a fuller round evaluation? I think this thing is actually a tool to give you a more rounded 360-degree view of anybody. It's actually the opposite. I don't know if that's the answer you thought I was going to say.
I was actually hoping you would say that. That makes me feel good. I'm glad that you feel that way. And it makes perfect sense to me. Unfortunately, I've got time for just one more question, and this is the question we always like to end with. Let's say, excuse me, let's say I'm a manager or a company that is looking to bring gamification into my company for the first time, or I've had failures in the past, I'm looking to do a better job of success. Where do I start? Do I start with a pilot program? Where do I begin? And what are some of the best places to start inside the average enterprise?
So I think the onboarding one was interesting. Communities are interesting. Learning is interesting. Performance management, keyboard. What I would try to do is you find a single use case where you know there's pain in your work. You know, onboarding, my engineers are taking 3 months longer than they need to, and this is costing me hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Or, nobody's watching the videos that they're supposed to watch, and as a result, we're having bad customer interactions. You know, where I would go where there's pain first, and I wouldn't try to boil the ocean. The interesting thing about this kind of stuff is it goes wall to wall, and the whole idea of the 360 employee is imagine being able to show somebody where their value is in every part of the organization. But to do that takes a long time, so I wouldn't start with that. I guess my recommendation is find your pain, identify your technologies, and then go from there.
Great. Well, it has definitely not been a pain to talk to you. I've really enjoyed it, so thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure.
Oh, sure. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today's show. Steve and I will be joining you in the chat room in just a second, though, so don't go away. But before we do, I just want to let you know that next week we'll be talking the future of the sharing economy with Dave Paro, account director and retail technology lead at Walker Sands. Among other things, we'll be talking about how you can turn that dress or tuxedo in your closet into cash if you don't mind other people's cooties. We hope you join us next week at 3 p.m. Eastern and every Wednesday 3 p.m. Eastern after that. In the meantime, I'd love to thank Steve Sims for joining us today. I'd like to thank all of you who tuned in today. We couldn't and we wouldn't do this without you. So thank you very much. Until next time, remember, this is your IT life. The rest of us are just paying rent.